This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Many celebrities began somewhere else before taking a sharp turn into the big time, much like Rajiv Satyal. He's gone from University of Cincinnati engineer to P&G marketer to worldwide comedian. He's embarking on his I Am tour, which will be in Cincinnati on June 19th, and he joins us to discuss his true roots in comedy. Rajiv, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me, how did you make the leap from being an engineer and a marketer to being a comedian?
I turned 30, and I freaked out. You know, I was born and raised in Cincinnati, and I love Ohio. But I was like, you know, I got to go do something else. And that was really the catalyst.
So did either of those professions, have they helped you in your comedy career, whether it was in terms of things that you should do or things that you should not do as a comedian?
I think that in this game of comedy, whatever you bring into the fold can help you if you want it to help you. So engineering, I went to the University of Cincinnati, 2000, and, you know, you learn analytics and how to, well, I mean, you develop an analytical mind, and a lot of comedy is very logical, and a lot of the best comedy are good arguments, and it's pretty well structured. And with marketing, I think it's, you know, you're up there, you are marketing yourself, you are selling something, and you are developing a brand and delivering value in some way. So, sure, if you want to be a nerd and bring that stuff to the stage, which I am and I do, then I think it can help you.
All right, Dave, you talked about that when you turned 30, you freaked out. Now, you just turned 39, is that right?
Yeah, wow, you did your research.
Yeah, and how has the, you know, you freaked out when you hit 30, but now that you're through your 30s, how's that whole decade turned out for you?
It's been good, because I think when people ask me now, they say, you know, did you think that you were going to be a comedian for your job? I think I go, well, you know, at the age of 10, you know, I hadn't done a ton of life analysis by the age of 10, but from what I remember, I think that I would have said something like, yeah, I could be an astronaut or a comedian or a president or something. And then at the age of 20, I was like, no, I'm going to be a lot more practical, and society sort of loads you up with things that you quote unquote have to do. And then by the age of 30, I think I returned to being a 10-year-old. So I was like, let me go back to being a kid and see what I would do if I could do this. And I turned 40 in March, this coming March. So I feel like I've kind of gotten away with it in my 30s, doing what I wanted to do.
So you think the 30s are better than the 20s?
I wrote a post about that when I turned 39 in March. And yes, I do think that your 30s are better than your 20s, generally speaking, yes.
What are a few of the reasons why they're better?
Let's see. You know yourself more, so you know what you don't like. I think that's a big thing. We spend a lot of time in our 20s. We're not really sure who we are, and so it takes a long time to get to a no, whether that's on a date, a job, a place you're living, what you like to eat, whatever it is. You're kind of like, I don't know, and you're still sort of forming yourself. And then by the time you get to about, especially 34, 35, you're like, yeah, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go there. I don't want to do this. And so I think you focus. You start caring more and more about less and less.
Yeah, I think as I've aged, I think I get to the point where I don't care quite as much what other people might think anymore. I think that's part of it, too.
Yeah, I think that you go more internal than external on some things. That's where the real validation comes from.
And the older you get, the more it becomes that way. Believe me. So how do you describe the type of comedy you do, Rajiv?
I would say I take a logical approach to social issues. I mean, I cover generally race, politics, dating, and technology. Those are the four things that I feel like my act gravitates towards. And I, you know, try to analyze each one of those things and bring my own personal experience to it. I would also say it's autobiographical. So I like to believe that by the end of the set, you feel like you know me a little bit.
Now, I've also read where you say this is TV clean. What do you mean by that?
TV clean is a term we use in the industry to describe what can appear on TV. Now, there are shifting standards, right? So I think George Carlin's 7 words you can't say on television. I think you can now say a couple of those, and there's some words that have been added that you can't say. So I think it's sort of a sign of the times, kind of a zeitgeist sort of thing. But I would say that you could play my act on cable TV, like, I don't mean HBO, of course you can say anything on there, but Comedy Central, but you could probably do my act on NBC primetime. I would like to say that's what that means.
Is it tough to be a comedian who takes that little bit, you know, you're going a little bit cleaner direction than a lot of them? Is it tough to do that?
It's very hard, and I think that's actually what I like about it. I like the challenge of the difficulty of it, and I like finding that line, you know? I mean, when people ask, you know, how did you get started? There are a lot of answers to that question. But really, I started in the classroom. I mean, I was kind of a smart aleck. I don't know if I can say the other form of that on WVXU. I'll keep it Radio Queen.
we appreciate that.
I was, for sure. And so I was one of those kids. And you have to find the line, you know. And if you said something that was too crazy, you're in the principal's office. And that kind of wasn't cool, right? I mean, I still had to get good grades and everything else. But if you said something that was too lame and too clean, and as we got older, people were like, yeah, that was kind of a joke we might have laughed at third grade, not eighth grade. So I think finding that line is a lot of fun. It is more challenging. And also, I think it's so weird getting up in front of a bunch of people you don't know and dropping the F-bomb. That seems so strange. Like, I don't know them. They don't know me. And it just seems like, you know, where does the phrase polite company come from? So several reasons I try to stay clean.
You find people like this kind of comedy?
I hope they do. I think so. I think that they appreciate someone who's clean. I work like off stage. I watch a lot of dirty comedy and I love a dirty joke and all that. I'm not a prude, but I think that there's a cleverness there, and I think that being able to find that is kind of fun, and that's part of the game.
Now, a lot of people look at being a comedian as a lark job, but what's the truth about that? How long and how hard do you work to develop your routine and is there a grind to being all on the road all the time?
There is. I mean, I've been on the road. I'm on the East Coast right now. I'm actually calling, you called me. I'm in Washington, D.C. I go back to L.A. today, and then I go from there, and I'm doing this tour and everything. So it is a grind. I think that it takes a certain personality to be able to pull that off. You really have to throw security and stability to the wind. And if those are your values, I remember before I went into this, a friend of mine, I made a comment to a friend of mine who was in L.A., and I said, yeah, because I'm this wild and crazy guy. He goes, yeah, you're really wild and crazy. 6 years at Procter & Gamble, 30 years in Ohio, that is wild and crazy, let me tell you. And I was, I think I was silent for the first time of my life for a few seconds, and I go, wow, I can't believe you said that to me. He goes, look, Rajiv, you can either live your values of security and stability, if that's what they are, that's great, no problem. But if you're going to say you're wild and crazy, you're living in conflict. You need to do something wild and crazy. Quit your job, move to L.A., be a comedian. That would be wild and crazy.
Well, what exactly does it take to be a comedian?
Well, you got to be funny. That helps.
Yeah, that's true. That's a big one.
That's a given, right? But there's something to that, in that being funny is a talent and being a good stand-up is a skill. So talent is congenital. It's innate. I said congenital. I'm keeping it clean. And then for... still, it's something that's learned, it's practiced, the whole Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours thing. You keep working at it. But comedic timing is to a comedian what rhythm is to a dancer. If you don't have rhythm, you can still be a good dancer. You just have to learn how to count. But you're probably not going to be a great dancer without rhythm. And it's the same thing in comedy. If you don't have comedic timing, it's going to be difficult. You can learn jokes, you can memorize them, you can practice. But if you aren't a funny person, I think it'd be pretty difficult.
So how long does it take to develop that rhythm? I mean, is this something that you're born with, or is this something that you can develop?
I think whether you're funny or not probably is something to some degree you're born with. It's like leadership. It's a lot of these debates, that, you know, nature, nurture, all that sort of thing. But parents are kind of the funny link between nature and nurture, right? Because if your parents with whom you grew up are biologically yours, then they are your nature and they are your nurture. I mean, you don't really have much contact with many other people other than your parents for the first, I mean, they are definitely the dominant people in your life the first 5 years of your existence. And so if your parents nurtured that, I feel like they say that comedians are people who either got too much love or not enough love. So either you got to be really neglected or things have to be really bad. And then you're in a lot of pain and you're pushed down and pushed down and pushed down, and then you're like spring and you spring up. Or you have to be smothered with positive affirmation and everybody can just kind of tell you that you're funny and laughing at what you say, and before you know it, you're on your way.
And how did your parents take the news when you said you were leaving the corporate world to become a comedian?
Day one, they flipped out. I remember that because I left Procter & Gamble, went to L.A., and I was actually the brand manager of Fiji Water, the square bottled water out there. And, well, I guess it's more of a rectangle, but think of it as a square. Anyway, I was out job for all of about 12 weeks, and then I left it, and we went our separate ways, and I had to break the news to my parents, and, you know, day one, they were screaming, but day two, they calmed down, and that wasn't a really long time for them to come around. My dad was like, now that you're doing it, go get on this night show, like, go work hard, and, you know, it takes years to do that, but if you're going to do this, do it well.
What did your friends think when you said you were going to do this?
Well, they were for the most part supportive, and I think I was the last one to know. So being a comedian and being the last one to get the joke is sort of ironic, but everybody was like, yeah, but we figured that's why you moved out to L.A. to be a comedian. I mean, you weren't going to be a brand manager. You could have just stayed in Cincinnati if that's what you wanted to do. I mean, Procter & Gamble invented brand management, so it doesn't seem to be the reason. But I think, you know, without getting too deep, I feel like, you know, I ended up there for a reason, and I was just thinking that, you know, you don't end up there 30 and single, and I had a little bit of seed money from leaving the company, and I was like, okay, I'm going to stand here and I'm going to be a comedian.
Well, how do you think social media have changed the world of comedy?
It's made it way worse in some ways, because I was actually just reading something last night about how society has gotten so touchy. And it's a vicious cycle, a vicious circle. I mean, people get touchy, so people feel like they can't say anything, so that people get even touchier, and they really can't say anything. And we're, like, honesty and truth are dying. I mean, stand-up comedy is maybe the last bastion of truth in society. And that is being attacked by a lot of things. And I think that people are forgetting that if the joke worked in the room, then it's okay. Like, we can't put it online later and go, what do you guys think of this? They weren't there. They weren't able to, like, if you took a transcript of your life and, you know, and people saw what you said out of context, some things that you said, some things that I said, some things that everybody said, and be like, whoa, I can't believe you said that. Right, but yeah. You're missing the context of it. There was a joke, there was a tone, there was sarcasm, there was all this stuff that is part of a larger routine. So I think at a comedy club, especially in places like this, we have to trust the audiences. The audiences are the people. And if they're laughing, having a good time, they're going to let you know if the joke isn't funny or it's offensive or whatever else. But social media, a lot of people are being put on, you know, Facebook or YouTube or Twitter, and then they're being judged later. It's like, well, that's not really a great thing. Now, there's obviously upsides to social media, but I chose to go the negative one on that way.
Now, you use the word touchy. That's interesting. How do you think overall our sense of humor is in the nation nowadays? Have we lost our sense of humor to some extent?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not really sure why that is, but it's a lot of this political correctness. And I live in the middle of the political spectrum, but I feel like conservatives and liberals are equally destroying the country. I'm not going to say that one of them gets more credit or blame for that, but I will blame liberals for the PC boom. I feel like, you know, it's almost as if there's this thing called Allport scale, and it talks about racism, and the first level of it is jokes and, you know, ethnic jokes, and then it goes all the way up to some really pretty terrible stuff. But I feel like people are attacking the bottom level. They're like, oh, let's just, you know, let's attack these comedians who are making jokes instead of the root problem. And it's almost like when you go to work and you know you're supposed to really be working on your memo or your presentation, but it's just easier to do emails. So you just end up doing emails because they're easy to respond to. I feel like comedians and jokes are easy targets. And so it's understandable. People are like, well, comedians shouldn't be saying this, shouldn't be saying that. It's like, why don't we attack the root of the problem? And no, that's too much work. No one wants to do that kind of work. So I feel like sense of humor is sort of dying with that. People are attacking what people are saying instead of what people are doing, and that's the real problem.
So you think comedians have a giant kick me sign on their back?
Yeah, and we're the ones trying to hang the kick me sign on society. So I think that society is turning it around and blaming us. It's like, hey, we're just calling things out. We're observing and reporting. And we don't go up there. I don't go up there with what's the craziest thing I can say. That's not what I do. And I don't think that's what a lot of comedians do.
So you don't sit out trying to outrage people?
No, because that's, again, that goes back to the line, right? I mean, anybody can get up there and just, if you want to be outrageous, you don't even have to be a comedian. You can do a lot of things to outrage people. And I don't think that's really that interesting. I think it's more interesting if the person up there actually believes what he or she is saying. And then people can, you know, take it or leave it.
Talking about believing things that you're saying, you did a video called I Am Indian, where you make a lot of good points about India and being Indian in a humorous way. What kind of reaction have you gotten to that video?
Luckily, it was huge. I could not have imagined it was going to be that big of a deal. It ended up getting only about 400,000 views on YouTube, but then it went super viral on Facebook and an application called WhatsApp, which is something a lot of people use globally to text and all that sort of thing. And it traveled on that medium, and I didn't even know that things could go viral on WhatsApp. That was a surprise to me. But it's gotten millions and millions of views. There were a couple of Bollywood stars that tweeted it. When the Prime Minister of India spoke a few weeks ago and in Shanghai, they played my video right before he came out. So I've kind of opened for the Prime Minister of India at this point. And that video resonated with a lot of people. I was very proud and very happy and very humbled that people found something else that they liked.
You know, I Am Indian, that led to I Am an Ohioan, right? And then after I watched that, Rajiv, I felt really proud to be an Ohioan. The Buckeye State really has a lot going for it, doesn't it?
It really does, and that's exactly what I wanted people to realize. When LeBron James left Miami to go home to Cleveland, or I should say come home, but I'm in D.C. right now, I'm not sitting in Ohio, but when he left to come home, I just started doing research about Ohio, and I found a lot of things that ended up in that video, and even more than we could squeeze into under 3 minutes. And I was like, why do people rag on our state so much? But I get why. There's some crazy, funny things about it. It is kind of funny. But at the same time, wow, we've done a lot for the world. And we don't really have a lot of state pride, especially in Southwest Ohio, because, you know, I asked a friend of mine this, and she's like, well, we have our own colleges, and then sports teams, and then we kind of live in the tri-state area. So there's almost like an Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio thing. And I'm not knocking those states, except at the end of the video, you can watch that. But it was, I just wanted people to feel that state pride and to go, wow, Ohio is kind of a great place. And it's great if you're an Ohio State fan, but it's bigger than that. It's not just about sports. Ohio's given a lot to the world, and I want people to know that.
And give us some examples.
Well, human flight, that's pretty darn big. A lot of people would say that was the biggest invention in history. It's definitely up there. Let's see, there were huge movie stars and people in Hollywood that came out of there. Steven Spielberg, Doris Day, Dean Martin, Paul Newman, Halle Berry. I mean, these people are all from Ohio. That's a pretty big deal. Let's see, what else is in that video? A lot of things. I think the sports thing is definitely a thing, but even music. I mean, John Legend and the Black Keys and Marilyn Manson, not a huge Marilyn Manson fan, but still kind of a cool thing.
Lots of famous comedians. I never realized that. Yeah.
Drew Carey, Arsenio Hall, Sarah Jessica Parker, who I have in there is kind of a, you know, funny Patricia Heaton, and Fred Willard, and a lot of people. Dave Chappelle lives there. He's not from there. He's actually from here in D.C., but, you know, it's a funny state. That's a lot of people. P.J. O'Rourke, I mean, it's got a lot of humor that's come out of there. Cat Williams, the list goes on and on.
You know, on one of your previous tours, you said you were in it to look for a wife. So have you had any luck on that front?
You know, ultimately, I did. It's funny. I did a show called No Man's Land, and I talked about how I could not find a wife, and I was going to find one on the tour. Well, I didn't find one on the tour, but what the show did, and this is sort of art imitating life, the show was about manhood in modern society, and I had to take such a deep dive into myself that I turned into a man. It took me a long time. I was, you know, 37, 38 at the time, but manhood is a mindset. I don't think it's just what a person looks like, and I became a man. The show got me ready for when I did eventually meet my now fiance. And, you know, I just performed in New York City a couple nights ago. Thank you very much. And I stood on that same stage talking about how hopeless it was. And here I am a little over a year later, and I'm engaged to be married. And, you know, that's the power of entertainment and art and self-discovery.
So you were lucky on that front. That worked out for you. Looking back on your career as a comedian, are you happy with how things have turned out for you?
Yes, I always said that there were four levels of making it. To me, you know, this goes back to that engineering, marketing, nerdy kind of, you know, making a business plan and kind of defining all that sort of thing, And the first level for me was doing what I wanted to do. In other words, working in the industry in which I wanted to work. So entertainment. And I've always said, you know, gosh, I mean, to work in entertainment is amazing enough. Then to say specifically what you want to do, okay, how spoiled can you get, really? I mean, you get to be a comedian, live in Los Angeles. On some level, doing that full-time for 9 years or almost 10 years now, you made it on some level. That's the first level. The second level was being a talk show host. I mean, I don't need to be Jimmy Fallon, but having some kind of following online, on the radio, whatever. So maybe I want to be you. Maybe you're the second level for me. So
I don't know about that.
But maybe it's a different scale, right? So, but yeah, that was to me like, you know, having that sort of thing, being a talk show host. The third level was hosting the Oscars. And that was a big, hairy, audacious goal that I aimed towards, because comedians generally either become actors, social commentators, or hosts. And you could be more than that, you know, you can be more than one of those things. But hosting the Oscars is the ultimate, you know, pinnacle to be able to do that, even though it's a complete hell gig. And then the fourth level is...
Make it quick. We've only got about 15 seconds. Sorry.
Okay. Fourth level is leaving the world with something, and I feel like I did that with I Am Indian, and I hope I'm doing that with I Am Ohioan, and hopefully I'll do that with my tour.
Comedian Rajiv Satyal, his I Am tour will be in Cincinnati on June 19th. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.